priorities, Mr Speaker.
We now come to questions to Prime Minister Kirsten Oswald.
Question one, please.
Mr Speaker, I know the whole House will join me in congratulating John Swinney on becoming SNP leader and Scottish First Minister. I look forward to working constructively with him to deliver for the people of Scotland. Mr Speaker, this morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues and others. In addition to my duties in this House, I shall have further such meetings later today.
Kirsten Oswald.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. At last week's Prime Minister's questions, I highlighted the shocking rise in the number of teenagers trying vaping, and I asked the Prime Minister if he would take decisive action to stop vape advertising on football strips. He declined to do that. Since then, I have had an exchange with the Scottish Chief Medical Officer, Professor Sir Gregor Smith, during a session of the Tobacco and Vapes Bill Committee, and he said, "Where I become very uncomfortable and I am not supportive is where the massive attraction of sports companies is used in a way that promotes behaviours that are known to be unsafe or unhealthy." Can I ask the Prime Minister again, does he still think that it is right that vape companies should sponsor football kits?
Mr Speaker, I'm glad the Honourable Lady agrees with me and the Government that we should do more to tackle youth vaping, and that's why we are bringing forward measures in the new bill to restrict the availability and appeal of vapes to children specifically, whether that's flavours or indeed marketing. As she knows, advertising of vapes is already heavily restricted by UK regulations, including a ban on advertising on television and radio and most online. Now, we've seen football take positive voluntary action in the past on issues such as this, but I will say to her that the Government will respond to the Honourable Lady's specific amendment in the usual way.
Cheryl Burns.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Officer in the armed forces. In recent weeks, Mr Speaker, my right honourable friend has announced plans to control welfare and get people back to work, to increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP, and pass legislation to get flights off to Rwanda. Does he agree with me that these are all issues that real people like my constituents in South East Cornwall care about, and that the Leader of the Opposition should do the right thing and back them?
Well, Mr Speaker, my honourable friend is a fantastic champion for her local area, and can I also thank her daughter for her service in the armed forces. And she's right, I'm not surprised that the Labour Party don't back our plans to stop the boats. I'm not surprised they don't back our plans to get people into work and reform welfare. But I do think that they should do the right thing when it comes to the security of our nation, and that's back our plans to increase defence spending and give our brave armed forces personnel the resources they need to keep us safe.
We now come to Leader of the Opposition, Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, can I warmly welcome the new member for Blackpool South? After the representation that fine town has had recently, it's good to know they've got a proper champion back at last. Can I also warmly welcome the new Labour MP for Dover to these benches? Mr Speaker, if one week a Tory MP who's also a doctor says the Prime Minister can't be trusted with the NHS and joins Labour, and the next week the Tory MP for Dover, on the front line of the small boats crisis, says the Prime Minister cannot be trusted with our borders and joins Labour, what is the point of this failed government staggering on?
Well, Mr Speaker, can I actually join him in welcoming his newest MP for Blackpool? I must say he looks a lot happier than the member who was sitting there last week. But let me join with him in congratulating all new and paying tribute to all former councillors, PCCs and mayors across the country. I hope his new ones do him as proud as I am of all of mine, Mr Speaker. Great leaders like Andy Street, who leave behind a strong legacy of more homes, more jobs and more investment, in sharp contrast to the legacy left by the last Labour government, which was a letter joking that there was no money left.
Well, Mr Speaker, in addition to losing two Tory MPs in 2 weeks, the Prime Minister's been on the receiving end of some of the biggest by-election swings in history. He's also lost 1,500 Tory councillors, half of his party's mayors, and a leadership election to a lettuce. How many more times do the public and his own MPs need to reject him before he takes the hint?
Well, Mr. Speaker, this time last year I reminded him of some advice, actually, from his own mentor, Tony Blair, who had said at the time that he can be as cocky as he likes about local elections, but come a general election, it's policy that counts, Mr. Speaker. Now, one year on from that advice, what has he managed? £28 billion of tax rises, 70 new business regulations, 30 U-turns, and a deputy leader under a police investigation.
Well, I'm surprised he brought up a police investigation. I think his record is two, the seatbelt as well. Played two, lost two in relation to police investigation. But it's the same. The public keep telling him, the voters tell him it's not good enough. Instead of listening, he keeps telling them everything's fine, if only they'd realise his greatness. He just doesn't get it. But at least after Thursday night, Mr. Speaker, he can go to the many places that he calls home and enjoy the fruits of his success. In Southampton or Downing Street, he's got great Labour councils. At his mansion in Richmond, he can enjoy a brand new Labour mayor of North Yorkshire. And at his pad in Kensington, he can celebrate a historic third term for the mayor of London. Now that he too can enjoy the benefits of this changed Labour Party, is he really still in such a hurry to get back to California?
Mr. Speaker, I must say I was of course surprised to see the honourable gentleman in North Yorkshire, but probably not as surprised as he was when he realised he couldn't take the tube there, Mr. Speaker. But I can tell him that the people of North Yorkshire believe in hard work, secure borders, lower taxes, and straight-talking common sense, Mr. Speaker. They're not going to get any of that from a virtue-signalling lawyer from North London.
Well, it was great to be in North Allerton, where they just voted to reject the Prime Minister's proposition. Mr. Speaker, he's finally found something in common with the British public. No matter where he calls home, all his neighbours are backing this changed Labour Party. And they keep rejecting him because they have sussed him out. They know there's nothing behind the boasts, the gimmicks, the smug smile. He's a dodgy salesman, desperate to sell them a dud. Now, Mr. Speaker, 16 days ago, when he held a press conference claiming victory on Rwanda, he said the next few weeks will be about action. People want deeds, not words. So let's test that. How many small boat crossings have there been since he said that 16 days ago?
Mr. Speaker, actually, just before we go on to that, he talked about a changed Labour Party. That's important because he talked about a changed Labour Party. He talks about it a lot. But just this morning, and he also talked about his new mayor in London. So just this morning, we've learned that the Labour mayor in London believes, and I quote, that there is an equivalence between the brutal terrorist attack of Hamas and Israel defending itself. And let me be crystal clear. There is absolutely no equivalence between a terrorist group and a democratic state. So can I ask him now, will he take this opportunity to demonstrate that Labour Party has changed? And will he condemn those comments from the Labour mayor?
Well, I know that was the last run out before the general election, but he's getting ahead of himself in asking me questions. Mr. Speaker, I notice he didn't even attempt to answer the question. He knows the answer. Since he claimed victory 16 days ago, there have been a staggering 2,400 small boat crossings. 2,400. That's a gimmick, not a deterrent. And those 2,400 will be added to the Tories' asylum perma backlog, which is forecast to rise to 100,000 by the end of this year. Now, the Prime Minister pretends he will remove them all to Rwanda. but Rwanda can only take a few hundred a year. Yeah. At that rate, the Prime Minister's grand plan would take over 300 years to remove them all. Mr. Speaker, that's tens of thousands of people with their claims going unprocessed, who are going to be here for their entire lifetime, living in hotels at the taxpayers' expense. It is absurd to call that anything other than an amnesty handed to them by the Tory party, isn't it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, he had the opportunity to condemn the comments of his mayor, a mayor who said that there is an equivalence between Hamas and Israel. He did not do that, and everyone will see what that is. That is the Change Labour Party, Mr. Speaker, right there. Since I became Prime Minister, small boat crossings are down by a third. That's because we've doubled NCA funding, increased enforcement rates, closed bank accounts, deported 24,000 people, processed more claims, and, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to border control, there is a crucial difference between us. We want secure borders. He's happy with open borders.
Mr. Speaker, the whole country knows that removing less than 1% of asylum seekers isn't stopping the boats, it's granting an amnesty, a Tory amnesty. But if he thinks the voters are wrong, if he thinks his own MPs joining the Labour Party are wrong, if he thinks anyone believes any of the nonsense that he spouts, why doesn't he put it to the test and call a general election?
Mr. Speaker, he talks about removing people. This is a person who campaigned, to stop the deportation of foreign national offenders, Mr. Speaker. It shows how out of touch his values are with the British people. But, Mr. Speaker, it's yet another week where we hear nothing about his plan to do anything on the issues that matter to the country. Meanwhile, we're getting on reforming welfare and getting people into work. He opposes it. We're controlling migration, legal and illegal. He opposes it. And, as we heard, Mr. Speaker, we are boosting defence spending to strengthen our country. He opposes it, and that's the difference. He snipes from the sidelines. The Conservatives are building a brighter future.
When it comes to small boat crossings, there's a lot of talk of human rights. But surely the only human right and life that matters is the life of children who are being taken across the Channel. In this respect, will the government now do the only thing that will actually be a real deterrence, and that is to arrest and detain all those who land illegally on our shores and then offshore them promptly, so that once and for all we can save lives and end this cruel and callous trade?
Well, Mr. Speaker, my right honourable friend is right that these crossings are incredibly dangerous and they risk people's lives. Just weeks ago, a 7-year-old girl died attempting the crossing. And that's why, as a matter of basic compassion, we must do everything we can to break the cycle of the criminal gangs. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, you need a deterrent. That's what the National Crime Agency say. That's how we dealt with illegal migrants from Albania, because it's only by removing people who shouldn't be here that we remove the reason for them to come in the first place. And that is how we'll control our borders. And it's clear that it's only this party that not only has a plan to stop the boats, but has a plan to stop the tragic loss of life in the Channel 2.
SNP leader Stephen Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I begin by also congratulating the fantastic John Swinney on becoming Scotland's first minister. Our opponents should be careful, very careful, what they wish for. Mr. Speaker, as we await the imminent Israeli incursion into Rafah, where 1.2 million people are sheltering, including 600,000 children. It has been reported that the United States has paused an arms shipment to Israel. The UK will now follow suit, won't it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, there are gentlemen may not realise, but the UK government doesn't itself directly provide arms or ship arms to Israel. And when it comes to the situation in Rafah, I've been very clear that we are deeply concerned about a full military incursion of Rafah, given the devastating humanitarian impact. I've made that position and point specifically to Prime Minister Netanyahu whenever we've spoken, and will continue to urge all sides to focus on the negotiations at hand to bring about a pause in the conflict, to release hostages and get more aid in.
Stephen Flynn.
Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. The confidence that Israel has shown in its military ambitions in Rafah stems from the silence which has been shown from its allies on the front benches in this place and indeed elsewhere across the world. Now, we know, we all know, that UK Arms and Tech is supporting Israel's activities in Gaza and will be used in any attack on Rafah. Knowing that and the devastation which is going to occur, surely the time has come to end our complicity and to halt arms sales to Israel.
Well, Mr. Speaker, of course we take our defence export responsibilities extremely seriously, and that's why we operate one of the most robust licensing control regimes anywhere in the world. We periodically review advice on Israel's commitment to international humanitarian law, and ministers always act in accordance with that advice. And that is crystal clear for the House to understand. Our position with regard to export licences following the most recent assessment is unchanged. And I know that he will join me in urging all parties to engage in the negotiations that are happening so we can see a pause in fighting to get more aid in, hostages out, and then bring about a sustainable ceasefire to this conflict.
Martin Bickers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My constituents in rural villages and on the fringes of the Grimsby-Cleethorpes urban area are very concerned about overdevelopment. They recognise that the highway infrastructure and public services are already overloaded. Could my right honourable friend consider amending planning guidance so that local plans and decisions taken by local planning authorities are not overridden by planning inspectors? And they'd be greatly encouraged if he would agree to meet with me and my colleagues from the neighbouring Gainsborough and Grimsby constituencies to discuss this further.
My honourable friend is right that sustainable development must be at the heart of the planning system, and that's why we're committed to meeting the needs for housing by building the right homes in the right places and protecting the environmental assets that matter most. The National Planning Policy Framework is clear that we should be responsive to local circumstances. I know that the relevant local plan in my honourable friend's area is due for further consultation later this year and that he'll engage with that process, but I will happily meet with him and colleagues to discuss his situation further.
Ed Davey.
Mr. Speaker, the abuse suffered by 88-year-old Anne King at the hands of staff in her care home was captured on a hidden camera. The footage is stomach-churning. Anne died in October 2022, and it took nearly a year before the CQC launched a criminal investigation. Now Anne's children are working to protect other care home residents from being subjected to such appalling abuse. Her son came to see me as his MP to ask for my help in their campaign. So will the Prime Minister join me in backing Anne's Law, a proposal to include a national register to professionalise the care workforce and hold those staff who are abusive to account? And will he meet with Anne's family and myself to discuss this idea?
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I first of all extend my sympathies to Anne's family for what she went through. Obviously, that's not appropriate, and I'll make sure that the department engages with him and Anne's family on the proposed law. And he's right to say we should have high standards across the care industry, and we're walking towards more investment to support our care home staff, making sure that they have training, qualifications, development, and we have a regime in place that can hold everyone to account for delivering the high standards that we would all expect.
Sarah Downes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does my right honourable friend agree with me that one of the greatest things that these backbenches bring to Westminster is plain old-fashioned common sense?
Yeah. And it's
Derbyshire common sense. Derbyshire common sense that means that the good people of Ashbourne and surrounding villages reject the Sadiq Khan ULEZ rules and even the 20 miles an hour Welsh. Will he join with me and perhaps ask his neighbour if he will pay for the Ashbourne bypass?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know my honourable friend has been a dedicated campaigner for the Ashbourne bypass, and the government is committed to investing more in the Midlands, particularly investing every penny of the £9.6 billion from HS2 back into the local area. And she's right that we will focus on drivers and their priorities, not continue the war on motorists, which is waged by the Labour mayor in London, but also the Labour Party in Wales, with both ULEZ and 20-mile-an-hour speed limits. It's this party that is unashamedly on the side of the motorist.
Emma Lulbert.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Our Child of the North cross-party group found that expectant mothers were terminating wanted pregnancies as they could not afford another mouth to feed. Recent figures show infant and child death rates have increased in the most deprived areas, and 50 children have died alone in unregulated accommodation. Is this his plan for a brighter Britain in action?
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, obviously what the Honourable Lady has described is tragedy. Nobody wants to see children grow up in those circumstances, and that's why I'm proud that the government has overseen a significant fall in poverty, but particularly child poverty, since 2010 through a range of measures. And I'll make sure that she is aware for her constituents of all the support that is in place, both through the Department of Health and through the Department for Work and Pensions and local authorities, to provide support to the most vulnerable families in our communities.
John Penrose.
Mr. Speaker, Weston-super-Mare is a growing town, so local health services are rightly growing too. Weston Hospital is treating more patients for a wider variety of problems than before. GP surgeries are offering thousands more appointments this year than last, and our new diagnostic centre means faster tests and treatments. But there's a fly in our NHS prescribed ointment. Dentistry isn't fixed yet. The new dental recovery plan is very welcome, but when will it mean appointments that Westonians can book?
Mr. Speaker, our dentistry recovery plan will make dental services faster, simpler and fairer for patients, funding around 2.5 million more appointments. And I was pleased to note that access is improving in my honourable friend's area, with almost 10% more children seeing a dentist in June last year than the previous year. But we are going further. The new patient premium that was announced last year is ensuring that more NHS dentistry will be provided. And since then, at the end of January, 500 more practices have said that they are now open to new patients.
Chris Law.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's now been over a month since the Parliamentary Ombudsman delivered a long-awaited report on pension injustices. Yet women born in the 1950s in my constituency of Dundee, and indeed every constituency in this House across these islands, are still waiting to hear if the UK Government will listen to these recommendations and deliver compensation. Mr. Speaker, I was proud to see the Scottish Parliament support a motion last week calling for compensation to be delivered without delay, but utterly dismayed to see members of the Conservative Party and the Labour Party abstain. So can the Prime Minister finally set out when Wasby women will receive the compensation they rightly deserve?
Mr. Speaker, I understand the strong feelings across the Chamber on this topic and the desire for urgency in addressing them. However, following the Ombudsman's 5-year investigation, it is imperative that we take the time to thoroughly review the comprehensive findings that have been published. An update to the House will be provided once the report's findings have been fully considered. More broadly, we are committed to ensuring pensioners have the dignity and security in retirement that they deserve, and most recently increasing the state pension by £900 thanks to the triple lock.
Sir Philip Davis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Is the Prime Minister as appalled as I am at reports of militant civil servant trade union political activists seeking to find ways not to implement the Rwanda deportations? Does he agree with me that if they are not prepared to implement the will of the government, an Act of Parliament that was passed by both Houses of Parliament, that they should conclude that being in the civil service is perhaps not for them, and maybe they can look for alternative employment at other left-wing organisations that masquerade as being impartial? Maybe they could try the BBC or Channel 4 News.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, you know, my expectation is that civil servants will continue to be committed to supporting our priority of stopping the boats and deliver in accordance with the Civil Service Code. He'll know that we made specific changes to ensure compliance with that code as we push through with our plans. But I agree with him more broadly that we are the only party that has a plan to stop the boats, and we will face down all the obstacles in our way to deliver on this crucial priority for the British people. And whoever stands in our way, whether it's the Labour Party or others, we will deliver for this country on this vital issue.
Malcolm McDonald.
Mr. Speaker, China has now hacked the data of defence personnel, the Electoral Commission, various other public institutions, and has targeted many members of this House. And yet plans by China's largest wind turbine manufacturer, Mingyang Smart Energy, to build its largest European facility right here in the UK advance at pace, with the facility set to be built in Scotland. Given widely shared concerns about the involvement of hostile states such as China in the UK's critical national energy infrastructure, does he not agree that now is the time for this project to be paused, to be reviewed by the government on national security grounds? And if not, what message does he think that sends?
Well, as I've said repeatedly, China is a country with different values to ours and is acting in a way that is increasingly authoritarian at home and assertive abroad. It's right that we take firm steps to protect ourselves against that, particularly in the area of economic security, which is why this government passed the National Security and Investment Act, precisely so that we can screen transactions without commenting on individual ones, of course, to protect this country. And we have used those powers, not least to block Chinese investment in a sensitive semiconductor company, but also to ensure that the Chinese state nuclear company had no part in the future of our nuclear power. So he can rest assured that we're alive to the challenges and have passed laws that give us the powers to protect against them.
Charlize Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 5-year-old Benedict Blythe was a lovely little boy who attended a primary school in my constituency. Sadly, however, he died of anaphylaxis, a severe allergic reaction. The coroner's inquest has not yet reported, but speaking generally, on average, 2 children in every class have a food allergy, and allergic reactions take place more in school than in any other setting outside the home. Severe allergic reactions are on the rise and can be fatal. Yet there is no explicit legal requirement for schools to have allergy medication, an allergy policy, or other recommended safeguards being made available. There is only guidance. Will the Prime Minister meet with me and Benedict's parents, Helen and Pete, so that we can discuss a way forward to ensure that children who suffer from allergies in schools can be more safe, including schools having an allergy policy, adrenaline pens, and staff who know how to use them?
Well, firstly, can I extend my sympathy to Benedict's family? It's tragic always to hear about the loss of a child, and we fully understand the seriousness of severe allergies and believe that children with medical conditions should be properly supported to enjoy a full education and be safe at school. Now, there is a legal duty on the governing body of schools to make arrangements for supporting pupils, including setting out what needs to be done, symptoms, treatment. But I will ensure that my right honourable friend gets a meeting with the Health Secretary to discuss how we could further support pupils with serious allergies.
John Speller.
Yesterday, his Chancellor confirmed that its government policy to abolish national insurance a £46 billion annual cost, and no indication of where the money's coming from. So can the Prime Minister rule out further freezes on tax allowances or an 8p increase in income tax to pay for it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's total nonsense, and of course I rule that out. And let me just close up. Mr. Speaker, there is no unfunded policy. What we have said is that we have a long-term ambition to keep cutting national insurance to end the unfairness of the double taxation on work. We'll make progress towards that goal in the next Parliament, just as we already have in this, by cutting national insurance by a third in 6 months, delivering a £900 tax cut, at the same time is increasing investment in the NHS and increasing the state pension. But it's increasingly clear what this reveals is that the Labour Party opposes tax cuts for working people.
Angela Richardson.
Thank you. Empowering local pharmacies is a key part of this government's plan to cut waiting lists. In Guildford, we recently lost two neighbouring pharmacies. But good news, Mr Speaker. I'm pleased to report that by working diligently with local pharmacists, concerned residents, the Minister and the ICB, I have helped to secure a new pharmacy in Burford. Yeah. Will my right honourable friend join me in welcoming this new pharmacy, and does he agree that it is vital residents should have access to a good, efficient and above all local pharmacy? Yeah.
Well, Mr Speaker, I care deeply about the future of our community pharmacies. I'm very pleased to hear about my honourable friend's success in securing a new pharmacy for her constituents, joining the 10,500 others across the country. And she's now right about the important role that our local pharmacies can play. That's why we're backing them with £645 million of additional funding through Pharmacy First, so that you can now go straight to your pharmacist, receive treatment for seven of the most common ailments, saving you time and ensuring that patients get the care they need quicker and closer to home.
The Van Doorn Mishra.
Mr Speaker, last Friday the Guardian reported major structural deficiencies at Stepping Hill Hospital in Stockport. Stepping Hill's major outpatients building, the radiology department and the critical care unit have all been condemned. In March, I met with senior officials at Stockport NHS Trust. They were very clear that a sustained lack of capital investment is the root cause of problems at my local hospital. Mr Speaker, does the Prime Minister believe that our hospitals, quite literally crumbling, is the price worth paying for the 14 years of successive Conservative failure?
Mr Speaker, we fully recognise the need to invest in health infrastructure across the country, including at Stepping Hill Hospital. And that's why we are currently spending around £4 billion a year for Trust to spend on necessary maintenance and repairs, on top of the £20 billion new hospital programme and the additional funding that was put aside to deal with rack maintenance. But he talks about a legacy of the NHS. All he needs to do is look at his party's record in Wales, where people currently are experiencing the worst A&E performance and the longest wait times anywhere in Great Britain.
Ruth Edwards.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Mr Speaker, Nottingham City Council is expecting to fall short of its housing target by 6,000 new homes. Last time this happened, Rushcliffe, as a neighbouring authority, was forced to take thousands of homes on top of its own housing target, which led to huge pressures on our green spaces and public services. So can my right honourable friend reassure me and my constituents that the changes we've made to the planning system will mean that this time we will be protected from Labour's failure in Nottingham?
Well, my honourable friend makes an important point, and why on this side of the House, the Conservatives believe in building the right homes in the right places with local people having a say, all Labour would do is impose top-down housing targets on areas, decimating our precious countryside. And in Nottinghamshire, as she says, you can see the difference, Mr Speaker, between the well-run Conservative County Council compared to the bankrupt Nottingham Council, which has left residents to pick up the bill from their profligacy.
Caroline Lucas.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. Untreated sewage was pumped into English waterways for more than 3.6 million hours last year, and into the sea off Sussex beaches three times in the last 24 hours alone. Yet since privatisation, the water companies have been allowed to rack up debts of over £64 billion and their shareholders to pocket £78 billion in dividends. The majority of the public, including 58% of Conservative and 80% of Labour supporters, want to turf out the profiteering polluters. They want water brought back into public hands. When is he going to listen to them and end the legalised scam of privatisation?
Well, Mr Speaker, our plans have gone further than any other previous government. In fact, we now monitor 100% of overflows, up from just 7% under the Labour Party. We're investing a record £56 billion into our water infrastructure, and we've enshrined in law strict targets and introduced unlimited fines for water companies, holding them and their bosses to account. So it's crystal clear that where the record shows that there's only one party who has a clear plan to tackle this issue for the environment, and it's the Conservative Party.
Final question, Matt Vickers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Everybody knows that Stockton is a great place with great people and a great football team. My right honourable friend recently visited the mighty Stockton town to see the incredible work that they do in the local community and heard about their promotion battle. I'm sure he'll want to join me